Hey, listener. Before we get started, there are a couple of things I need to point out about the podcast. First, this podcast is intended to serve as a study aid for students in the Texas Basic Peace Officer course and should not be used in place of classroom instruction. Second, you should not consider anything we discuss during the episodes as legal advice, and the opinions we express on the podcast are our own and are not representative of our employers or the Texas Commission on Law Enforcement. And finally, you should always consult your agency representatives and your county or district attorney's office before filing criminal charges based on anything you hear on the podcast. Are you a cadet in the Basic Peace Officer course in Texas? Are you an officer in another state planning to challenge the Texas Peace Officer Licensing Exam? If so, then this is the podcast for you. We are going through and breaking down the codified portions of the Basic Peace Officer course learning objectives to help you understand all the legal language. This is BPOC Basics. Hi, and welcome back to the podcast where we break down the learning objectives for the Basic Peace Officer course. In this episode, we're doing Chapter 6 of the Penal Code, Culpable Mental States and Culpability Generally. I'm Jim McGregor, the TCO coordinator for the Tarrant County College Law Enforcement Academy, joined by my co-host, as always, Amy Byram.
Hey, still here.
And we are going to be starting off with Section 6.01, Requirement of Voluntary Act or Omission. A person commits an offense only if he voluntarily engages in conduct, including an act, an omission, or possession. Possession is a voluntary act if the possessor knowingly obtains or receives the thing possessed, or is aware of his control of the thing for a sufficient time to permit him to terminate his control. So this is an interesting statute here. It's self-explanatory in the beginning, right? If somebody hands me something or I pick it up and put it in my pocket, that's a voluntary act. I know that I have it and I'm in possession of it. The second half of this sentence, though, is interesting, where if I'm, let's say I'm at an underage party, I'm under 21 and I'm at a party and there's alcohol, and I go and I sit down at a table and there is alcohol at the table. Now, whether I actually pick up this cup of alcohol or a beer and drink it myself or not, I'm in possession of it if it is within my arm's reach or in my control. And I know it's there. I know I'm underage. I know I'm not in the presence of my parent or legal guardian. And I'm not supposed to be there, or I'm not supposed to have this alcohol. And I don't make the conscious decision to terminate my control over this alcohol. So if I made the decision to go to this party, sit down at the table, and then there's all this alcohol readily available to me at this table, and I'm not in the presence of somebody that is authorized by law to furnish me this alcohol, and I choose to remain there, by law, by definition here in 6.01, I'm in possession of that alcohol. Is that right, Amy?
Yes, that is very true. A lot of times where you're going to see this is in, obviously, in the minor in possession example you just gave, a lot of times in traffic stops, when you find some type of drugs in the driver's car, if they are the only one in the car and they are driving and you find dope, then they're in possession. If they are driving the car and there is a passenger in the car, but the dope is found in the driver's side console, the driver's side door, and it's his car, even though there's someone else in the car, he's still in possession. So there are several different ways that someone can be in possession other than the obvious, they're holding something or
picking it up and sticking it in their pocket.
Exactly.
Okay. And then under C here, a person who omits to perform an act does not commit an offense unless a law is defined by Section 107, which was the definition we covered in Chapter 1 of what a law is, provides that the omission is an offense or otherwise provides that he has a duty to perform the act. So this would be like if I'm walking down, I'm a good Samaritan, I'm just an average citizen, I'm walking down the street and I see a person in a swimming pool and they're drowning. I have no legal obligation as an average citizen to run in there, dive in and save that person from drowning. But if I'm a lifeguard and I've been trained, I'm certified and I've been hired by the people that own that pool, whether it's a privately owned pool at like a country club or a fitness center, or it's a city-owned pool or something like that where I'm an employee of the pool hired to perform lifeguard services, then I would have an obligation to do something to aid that person that's drowning. And if I failed to do so, if I just saw that person drowning and thought, well, I don't want to get my hair wet, go, good luck, kid, and didn't do anything at all, that would be an omission and would be a criminal offense, right?
Correct.
All right. We kind of didn't cover this thing at the very beginning of this statute here where it says that a person commits an offense only if he voluntarily engages in conduct. So I have to choose to do something in order for it to be a violation of the law. I have to engage in that behavior on my own accord. If somebody threatens me or a loved one of mine with some type of violence or harm and says, if you don't do this, I'm going to do something bad to you or somebody you care about, I'm not doing that voluntarily. I'm doing that under duress. So therefore, that would not be a criminal offense on my part. Is that how I read that?
Yes, that would not be considered a voluntary act or omission. If you didn't voluntarily do it, if you didn't do it because you chose to do it, then that is not, yes, you have not met the requirements for actually committing an offense.
All right. Well, let's move on to 6.02, requirement of culpability. Except as provided by B, a person does not commit an offense unless he intentionally, knowingly, recklessly, or with criminal negligence engages in conduct as the definition of the offense requires. If the definition of an offense does not prescribe a culpable mental state, a culpable mental state is nevertheless required unless the definition plainly dispenses with any mental element. So what this is saying is that every law pretty much requires some form of culpability unless the law plainly says, hey, this law doesn't require a culpable mental state, right?
And I'll just add in real quick here, when they're talking about culpable mental state, it's kind of a, it sounds like legalese, and it's the legal term for a very, very, very important part of how we prove our cases. Basically, culpable mental state is kind of like where your head was at whenever you did whatever you did.
Yeah, what you were thinking.
Yes.
Yeah, and did you do this like, hey, I really want this to happen, or I really wasn't thinking, I was really being kind of, my head was somewhere else, and I was being negligent, or I wasn't paying attention, right?
Yes.
Okay, but what are we talking about here when we say that, you know, unless the law specifically outlines which culpable mental state or which level of culpability was required, if it doesn't say one's required, one still is required, right? So there's one,
yes,
by default.
Yes.
And then unless the law specifically plainly dispenses with any mental element. So the example I can think of off the top of my head is in Chapter 49, when we get there, we're going to talk about all the intoxication-related offenses.
Yes.
Well, if I'm intoxicated, I'm, by definition, not thinking clearly. I'm not using my normal mental faculties. So, of course, I'm not using my mind the way I'm supposed to. So the law says that I don't have a culpable mental state for those offenses.
Yes.
All right. Let's see here. If the definition of an offense does not prescribe a culpable mental state, but one is nevertheless required under B, intent, knowledge, or recklessness suffices to establish criminal responsibility. So any one of those three will be sufficient to prove that they are criminally responsible for what they did. So So if I can prove that they did it recklessly, then it would be sufficient, right?
Yes.
Okay. The culpable mental states are classified according to relative degrees, from highest to lowest, as follows. Intentional, knowing, reckless, and criminal negligence. It's really important that you know these and you know the order of them. So from highest to lowest, the culpable mental states are intentional or intentionally, knowing or knowingly, reckless, and finally, with criminal negligence. Proof of a higher degree of culpability than that charged constitutes proof of the culpability charged. What this says is that if I can prove you did it knowingly, then I don't have to prove that you did it recklessly, because recklessly would be a lower culpable mental state. So if I can prove a higher one, then by default, you did it by criminal negligence or by recklessness, if I prove that you did it knowingly or intentionally.
Exactly. You've pretty much kind of by default proven all of the lower level, all the lessers is what we call them. If you prove a higher, then you've automatically proven all the lessers.
All right. An offense defined by municipal ordinance. So fancy word, municipal means city. So if you have a city ordinance violation or by a county commissioner's court, may not dispense with the requirement of a culpable mental state if the offense is punishable by a fine exceeding the amount authorized by Section 12.23. So this is saying that on a Class C misdemeanor, which we haven't gotten into this yet, but if you have a Class C misdemeanor, the fine is normally capped at $500. City ordinances and county commissioner courts can have Class C misdemeanors that have fines that exceed $500 under this Section 12.23. If they do, they have to have a culpable mental state attached to those particular codes or municipal ordinances. They have to have one. All right. Let's move on to 6.03, the definitions of the culpable mental states. A person acts intentionally or with intent with respect to the nature of his conduct or to a result of his conduct when it is his conscious objective or desire to engage in the conduct or cause the result. So this is intentionally. So an example of an intentional act would be, let's say Jethro is up on the roof of a building and he's got Billy Bob there, and Jethro is upset with Billy Bob and he tells him, Billy Bob, I'm going to kill you. And he grabs Billy Bob by the shoulders and he pushes him off the roof of the building. And Jethro pushes him and Billy Bob plummets to his death. Falls off the roof of the building and dies. That would be intentional. Under B, a person acts knowingly or with knowledge with respect to the nature of his conduct or to circumstances surrounding his conduct when he is aware of the nature of his conduct or that the circumstances exist. A person acts knowingly or with knowledge with respect to a result of his conduct when he is aware that his conduct is reasonably certain to cause the result. So we could have the same situation here where Jethro is up on the roof with Billy Bob. Jethro doesn't have to verbally communicate, hey, Billy Bob, I want to kill you, but he could still grab him by the shoulders and push him off the roof, and it would still be knowingly or with knowledge that throwing somebody off of the roof, even of a one-story building, is going to probably cause somebody serious bodily injury or death. So it would be acting with knowledge that the result is most likely going to happen.
Yes.
Okay, C, a person acts recklessly or is reckless with respect to circumstances surrounding his conduct or the result of his conduct when he is aware but consciously disregards a substantial and unjustifiable risk that the circumstances exist or the result will occur. The risk must be of such a nature and degree that its disregard constitutes a gross deviation from the standard of care an ordinary person would exercise under all the circumstances as viewed from the actor's standpoint. This one's a little more difficult to grasp for a lot of students. There are some key words here, though, that you want to underline if you're following along in the book or if you are making flashcards for looking at this later. One of the things I would point out here in this text is the consciously disregards. So is aware but consciously disregards a substantial and unjustifiable risk. So I could have two people arguing and maybe one person pushes somebody down a flight of stairs. People are aware that if you push somebody down a flight of stairs, that it's probably going to hurt them. Now, it may or may not be done with the intent to harm somebody to the point of killing them, but there is a strong possibility that they could suffer serious bodily injury and potentially die as a result of this being pushed down a flight of stairs. So that would be conduct when he is aware but consciously disregards a substantial and unjustifiable risk. As an example, we could come up with a lot of examples of this. We were talking about this earlier. Maybe somebody's driving a car and they are texting while driving and then they run over somebody. They didn't try to run over the person, but we all know that texting and driving isn't safe. And it's also against the law. We have laws against texting and driving for this very reason, to protect the public. So if you're driving a car and you text and drive while you're operating a motor vehicle and you run over somebody and you kill them, for an example, that would be recklessly causing the death of somebody. We'll move on. D. A person acts with criminal negligence or is criminally negligent with respect to the circumstances surrounding his conduct or the result of his conduct when he ought to be aware of a substantial and unjustifiable risk that the circumstances exist or the result will occur. The risk must be of such a nature and degree that the failure to perceive it constitutes a gross deviation from the standard of care that an ordinary person would exercise under all the circumstances as viewed from the actor's standpoint. Couple of words here in this definition that I would highlight for those of you that are taking notes are, first of all, ought to be aware of a substantial and unjustifiable risk, and gross deviation from the standard of care. Those are two phrases that are very important for this definition. And examples here we were talking about would be, let's say that you have people that are arguing and they're both on a flat level surface, not at an elevated position, and they're out in a parking lot. And they get an argument, and Jethro shoves Billy Bob backwards. Billy Bob hits his head on the concrete or on the asphalt in a parking lot and dies. He didn't necessarily intend to kill him, but he died nonetheless. That could be considered acting with criminal negligence because he's still responsible for the death of Billy Bob there. Another example of this could be potentially somebody gets in their car, they're in a hurry, they're distracted, they put the car in reverse without checking their mirrors or their backup camera, and they start backing out of a parking space and back over somebody that's walking through the parking lot. Another example potentially of a criminally negligent act where somebody died as a result. Just two examples potentially. We could come up with many, many more. Finally, today we'll go over 6.04, causation, conduct, and results. A person is criminally responsible if the result would not have occurred but for his conduct, operating either alone or concurrently with another cause, unless the concurrent cause was clearly sufficient to produce the result and the conduct of the actor clearly insufficient. B, a person is nevertheless criminally responsible for causing a result if the only difference between what actually occurred and what he desired, contemplated, or risked is that, one, a different offense was committed, or two, a different person or property was injured, harmed, or otherwise affected. So under one, a different offense was committed. An example of this could be that, you know, Jethro is upset with Billy Bob, so he puts rat poison in Billy Bob's food. And his intent is to kill Billy Bob. But he doesn't put enough rat poison in Billy Bob's food, and Billy Bob gets really sick, but Billy Bob doesn't die. That's a different offense.
Or the opposite is also true.
Right. Or he meant to make Billy Bob really sick and not kill him, but he puts too much rat poison in there, and Billy Bob actually dies instead of getting really sick. Either way, that would be a different offense was committed. Or a different person or property was injured, harmed, or otherwise affected. So Jethro's upset with Billy Bob, and Jethro pulls out a gun, and he takes a shot at Billy Bob, but Jethro misses Billy Bob, and he hits Peggy Sue, who's standing right next to old Billy Bob, and kills Peggy Sue instead. Well, he can't say, oops, I didn't mean to shoot Peggy Sue, so I'm not responsible for that. He's still criminally responsible, even though that wasn't his intended target. So is there anything you want to add to this, Amy?
No, I think the examples were perfect for Section B, for a different offense or different person or property. I just want to go back to Section A real fast and just kind of make sure that's kind of a lot of words for basically not saying too much. It says, person is criminally responsible if the result would not have occurred but for his conduct. That I'll just go through the first part. But for is a fancy way of saying without. So if you want to substitute without, because you'll see that at other places in the code. So that's saying that I am criminally responsible if the result of the conduct, meaning somebody died, somebody would not have died without my conduct or but for my conduct. So if I hadn't shot Jim, he wouldn't have died. And the second part, operating either alone or concurrently with another cause, unless the concurrent cause was clearly sufficient to produce the result and the conduct of the actor clearly insufficient. Now, what that means is it doesn't matter. I'm still criminally responsible if I shot Jim by myself or if there was another cause, like if Jim had some type of medical condition and he died, but if I shot him and he died and the doctors could prove basically he died more probably from the gunshot wound than from his existing medical condition, the concurrent cause, then I'm still criminally responsible for that. Now, if the doctor says me shooting Jim really didn't change anything, he was going to die in the next 10 minutes anyway, then that I would not necessarily be criminally responsible in that situation.
Okay, so let me see if I understand this. So you shoot me in the foot, and I have a heart disease issue. So you shoot me in the foot, and I go to the hospital with my foot wound, and they're in the hospital. I have a heart attack while I'm in the hospital. If the prosecution can prove that I had the heart attack because of the stress of being in the hospital and being shot, then you could be held criminally responsible because the trauma that I endured as a result of being shot by you and being transported to the hospital and the just all the stress and everything of related to this event triggered me having a heart attack, then you could be held criminally responsible for that, even though, generally speaking, the wound to my foot was not life-threatening.
Yes.
Okay, I understand. All right, well, that pretty much wraps up Chapter 6 of the Penal Code. Join us next time as we delve into Chapter 7, which will be all about parties to the offense and criminal responsibility for the conduct of another.